As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Soccer show and our review of Champions League match day 3. Twas a match day where Rees fleeced Milan, where the officials didn't have any fans among the Catalans, where Bayern were flying, where Lopetegui saw his job conclude, no thanks to a dude named Jude, and where Erling Haaland kept it lean by only bringing his season goal tally to 19. Yikes. My name's Ryan Bailey. Here with slightly better judgment than the referees in the Inter versus Barca game is one Taylor Rockwell. Hello, Taylor.
I mean, that's high pressure. You don't know what kind of calamities I might be causing in this recording session. You never know, Ryan Bailey, but I appreciate you setting the stage.
Indeed. I mean, a low bar is what you're going to get there, I suppose, Tay-Tay. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm just going to, like, over-talk when Graham wants to talk. I'm going to, like, disagree at random points. I'm going to insist we talk about a game that nobody has notes for. I'm just going to create chaos, because that's what I think VAR did pretty well in that game.
Wonderfully so, Tay-Tay. And we'll get to that very shortly, but not before
we
introduce...
See, yeah, I'm doing it already.
Oh, he's done it. Joining us, Mr. Interrupter and myself, is a man who welcomes our new overlords, Napoli. Is that right, Graham Ruthven?
Absolutely, I do. I mean, we've got no choice at this point. It feels like even if I don't welcome them, they're going to take over the world anyway.
They are indeed. They're quite terrifying at the moment. We shall get to them later on in the show as well. But joining us, a man with the grace and poise of a Lionel Messi first-time hit, Joe Lowry. Hello, sir.
Oh, that's the highest compliment I could ever hope to receive. That hit from Messi was so good over the weekend. I believe with that goal, he became the first player in Champions League history to score against 40 different teams in the Champions League. 40! That is so many different teams, given that it's basically the same group, relatively speaking.
Basically
at least most
as many
of
as an MLS.
Right. It's, I mean, almost, Grant. Nearly. Almost. Let's not get carried away here. I mean, it was a beautiful goal, and Messi continues to be just incredible, as always.
40 is so many teams indeed, Joe. It is, in fact, 40 teams.
That's many.
Yes,
so many.
So many indeed. And we shall get to Mr. Messi and his PSG ilk shortly as well. But before we get to the action, we're doing a live show, everybody. In case you haven't heard, we are coming to New York for the start of the World Cup, Sunday, November 20th. Please come and see us at Littlefield, Brooklyn. It is not a field. It's not particularly little. It is a lovely indoor venue where our cohort Graham pointed out that both David Cross and James Acaster have done stand-up sets. So, Graham, a lot of pressure for you to be hilarious when we do Littlefield.
Well, I'm planning on blowing myself at Littlefield when we go to Bias Fienke joke there for anyone who's watched that show.
Yeah. Just don't do it prematurely, Graham. Just don't do it prematurely.
Of course. Wise advice.
And we are all staying together in Brooklyn, so I'm glad you're in Evernude at this point, Graham, as well. That will help us all out very much.
Joe, you getting all these references? You
love
clapping them all?
Love it. Actually, I did kind of get little bits and pieces, so I'm pretty proud of myself for that.
Excellent stuff.
We're going to be backstage, and we're just going to find blue handprints all over like the room that we have to like get ready, and just, you know, signs of Tobias Fünke being there.
There's... There's a wonderful masterpiece of a film called The 13th Warrior that I'm going to assume everyone has seen. In that one, Antonio Banderas playing, I believe, an Arab man, is like camping with Vikings and just slowly learns their language by hearing them all talk around a campfire, like over the course of like maybe a couple nights. And I feel like that's what Joe is with a lot of our references. He's just slowly sitting there squinting and listening and being like, I think I understand that one. Is he blue the whole time? Is that what's happening? Joe's slowly learning the language of the reference.
Wonderful stuff. Well, please come and see us at Littlefield, Brooklyn. It is on the weekend. It's on Sunday night. If you are around the New York metropolitan area, we would love to see you, love to hang out and have a drink with you. Still a few tickets left. Please check him out. The link in the description for that one. And by the way, I was talking to my friend who used to live in Brooklyn, who said there's a great brewery called Three's Brewery, which is one block away, and another place called Pig Beach, which I like the sound of. It's evocative. Pig Beach. Sounds good. And there's of course Lucky 13 Saloon. We discussed the metal bar opposite where they dance on the bar.
Joe's gonna dance on the bar.
Yeah,
that's what's gonna happen
after a couple of shoeies, maybe.
Yeah, that's right. Joey's gonna shoey a PBR because it's Brooklyn, and I think that's what you're supposed to do there. And then he's gonna dance on the bar of the metal bar afterwards.
I'm sorry. Do other beers have a blue ribbon, Ryan? I feel like until another beer gets a blue ribbon, you drink the one that has the blue ribbon.
That's right. It's like the winner of a dog show. It is a wonderful beer, Tay-Tay. Wonderful indeed. Let's get to the Champions League action from this week, though. Inter Milan 1, Barcelona 0. Hakan Çalhanoğlu making the difference in this game. Or was it the officials that made the difference in this game? A big win for Inter this was, who are now 3 points clear of Barcelona in their group. Barcelona prepared a formal complaint to UEFA over the refereeing in this game. We had a few controversial points, Graham, in this one. Denzel Dumfries with, we're going to call it, a fairly obvious handball in the 92nd minute. We had a 67 minute equaliser ruled out for Ansu Fati for handball, which was ruled out by VAR. A few other things, although Eric Garcia arguably got away with a handball himself in the first half. That looked like a certain penalty too. So a bit of a chaotic one, Graham.
Yeah, so let's address each of those VAR decisions quickly, because this chat can get a little bit tedious if we go on a little bit too long. But the first one, I think, what happened there was there was an offside decision that became a factor after they went to VAR. The second one is for the disallowed goal. Pedri scores after a cross comes into the middle. Onana kind of gets caught under the cross and then he tucks it in, but there's a handball by Ansu Fati. That one, I think, was probably the correct decision. That was one where when I looked at it in real time, I did not see that at all. And then when they slowed it down, you could see that it clearly, Ansu Fati's hand had kind of been up above his shoulder and it flicked off his fingers. The second one, though, was probably the wrong decision, to my eye at least. So Ansu Fati, he's about to get on the end of a cross and into the box, and Denzel Dumfries basically deflects it away from him with an arm, and an arm that isn't by his side at all. So I don't really know how that wasn't a penalty. So I sympathise somewhat with Xavi, who lost his cool towards the end of this match and was waving imaginary banknotes towards the officials, sort of implying that the referees had been paid off, which in Italy, by the way, I think we've spoken about this before, is hugely disrespectful. So I saw that on the front page of some of the Italian sports dailies this morning. Not a picture of Inter getting a timely win, a win that really eases the pressure on Simone Inzaghi, but a picture of Xavi waving his imaginary banknotes, which is quite apt for Barcelona because that's basically what they do in the transfer window.
Can I ask a question? So Ryan, maybe you would have the best detail on this, or maybe you, Graham. Why is it more offensive to do that in Italy than in other places? Because, implying or clearly suggesting that someone is cheating is not like a kind thing to do regardless. Why is it worse in Italy than in like Scotland or England or the US?
So I'd say, before you jump in, Graham, truth hurts a little bit is the certain aspect of it. But also, it's interesting with Inter, who I believe, for the Calciopoli scandal, of course, of the early 2000s, right. They were the ones who snitched everybody else in. And they were the innocent party, if memory serves me correct. So interesting that it was aimed at them, Graham.
Yeah, so Calciopoli is I think that is the answer, is that Italian soccer was pretty badly scarred by that scandal. So any sort of mention of that is slightly taboo because there is the sense that maybe it could happen again. I don't know. That's maybe joining the dots a little bit too far, but yeah. You get what I'm saying.
Either way, that's hilarious from Xavi. That is, I love that. That's phenomenal.
Yeah. And anecdotally speaking, by the way, everyone uses cash in Italy. When I use a credit card in the supermarket, they frown at me like, why are you doing this?
Yeah, so
there's one off the bingo sheet. Ryan complaining about Italy.
Yeah. I'm not complaining.
Thursday, October 6th. Check.
You know, the world's going cashless, but Italy is not for reasons. Reasons. Taylor, let's talk about this game, shall we? Barcelona, what do we make of their performance here? They're in third place in their group now on only 3 points. Danger of a second successive group elimination in the Champions League. Is that warranted?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. I think, and that's probably where a lot of this reaction has come from, because this was a Barcelona team that seemed to have been in pretty good form, seemed like they had figured out their kind of best combinations. Xavi thus far this season has done a good job of making adjustments when needed to get the best out of the team. This was an Inter team who, losing this weekend to Roma, seemed like they were there for the taking, seemed like this could be an opportunity for Barcelona to get that win or at least get a draw on the road and then put themselves in better position. Now, as things stand, it seems like they're going to have to win these final three games, including beating Bayern Munich, who don't tend to lose group stage games. So I think they're in a very difficult position now, and I think it's sort of expecting maybe to be able to win, or expecting a confident, competent performance, were Barca fans, expecting Inter to maybe not be as up for it, or for there to be a lot of pressure on them. Then the VAR decisions and even just some of the play, you don't really get many opportunities for Barcelona until like the 70th minute or so thereabouts. So it wasn't this sort of wide open back and forth game where there were lots of opportunities. It ends up being a game that was sort of stodgy at times with a lot of VAR intervention. And I think that leads to even more frustration than would have already been there.
And I think Barcelona kind of only have themselves to blame in terms of their performance. Yes, okay, maybe there was a dodgy VAR decision in there, but that would only have got them a point, you know, rather than a win. So it felt like they were quite predictable in this game. A lot of their attacks were coming through Dembele on the right side, and he was quite muddled in his decision making and didn't always produce a final ball. And they struggled to get into dangerous areas. So Barcelona only had two shots on target in this whole game. And when you look at the quality of their attack and the players that they brought on, Ansu Fati comes on in this game. Obviously, you have Lewandowski, who's scored a bajillion goals in La Liga so far this season, and he just didn't have any service at all. And Inter did do a good job of stopping the supply line into him, and basically stopping Barcelona finding any sort of channel other than that right side. But it felt like Barcelona were very much playing within themselves, and so Inter took advantage of that. And there's only so much complaints you could have about that.
And credit to Inter for that defensive structure, because I think that is something, a well-executed low defensive block is the recipe to upset teams like Barcelona, right? Who pretty clearly have more talent than Inter. Inter without Lukaku in this game, without Brozovic in this game, Barcelona had better players on the field. But I mean, a great neutralizer in soccer is to compress space, to be compact, to sit deep. And Inter, you know, fair play to them, did that very, very well with a relatively attack-minded central midfield trio. So they had Hakan Çalhanoğlu playing as the number six, right? So he was sitting the deepest at times with Mkhitaryan to his left and Barella to his right. You know, those are progressive number eights at best. And certainly with Mkhitaryan and even Çalhanoğlu, they've been more attack-minded tens, or even playing a little wider in the past. And so I thought that midfield setup from Inzaghi was fascinating. And it absolutely worked. Barcelona couldn't find space. You look at their pass map from this game, and it's a U, right? It is that horseshoe of sadness shape where they're not penetrating into the box. They're just going around and around. Yeah, that's not mine. I learned that recently on an Austin FC podcast I did. I'm so thankful. It was phenomenal. Landon and Jeremiah, you guys are great, because that was an awesome reference. It is, but it's like, you know, we're just passing the ball around in this horseshoe shape, around, out wide, back in front of the box, back around to the other side. And they were over-reliant on Dembele. His dot in terms of touch map was just massive relative to everyone else. But again, credit to Inter, because it's hard to execute this. I think a draw almost certainly would have been the most fair result from this game. But, I mean, they get a really nice goal from Çalhanoğlu from outside the box. There's a ball on the floor. It beats Ter Stegen, and that's 1-0. They can pack it in for the second half, and this game is done.
I found it difficult to work out what Xavi was going for with his defensive shape. So, yes, there were problems on the attacking side of the ball that you've laid out well there, Joe. But on the defensive side too, I a lot of my confusion just once again came from the use of Marcus Alonso as a left back. It just doesn't work, and Xavi seemed to want to use him as part of a back three out of possession. But then when they counter press and win the ball back, Alonso doesn't have that mobility to get forward, and this in turn denied Rafinha supply and then Ansu of any service when he came off the bench, and there's no option on the overlap, which made it easier for Inter to keep things congested and pinch the pitch and keep things narrow, with the exception of Dembele on the right, who was, as we've spoken about, he was unpolished in his output. But once Inter kind of figured this out halfway through the first half, they started to get Darmian higher up the pitch and also DeMarco up on the left side as well, with Roberto pushing into midfield for Barcelona. And I'm struggling to work out what Xavi wants to do with his defence. It kind of feels like he doesn't have the personnel to kind of enact any sort of plan. Balde comes off and off the bench in the second half, and maybe he's slightly more mobile than Alonso, but it's kind of confusing to work out Barcelona's defence. And just to add to the confusion, Barcelona have gone something like 550 minutes without conceding in La Liga, even though, and I've watched pretty much all of those 550 minutes, their defences look shaky at times. So yeah, maybe I know nothing.
Yeah, that's my MO, actually, Graham. I'll take that one. Horseshoe of sadness, by the way. That is entering my lexicon. Thank you very much, Joe. Yep. I wonder if there's a more positive... Is it like a horseshoe of hope or a horseshoe of opportunity as well?
I don't think so, because if you're getting into the box and creating good chances, then the horseshoe shape is kind of gone, and it's just maybe a line or some sort of square.
It's a wicket. The upside-down horseshoe is a wicket. It's a wicket of hope. There you go.
I like it.
It's all about breaking the horseshoe. That's what it's all about, to get in there. Inter, of course, with the advantage in this one. Their Milan buddies, Milan AC, having less fortune this Champions League match day. Let's talk about that one after a very quick break.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. Let's talk Chelsea 3, Milan 0. Fofana with the opener in this one. Aubameyang with another goal in this week. And Reece James with a goal as well. A very nice near post finish from Reece James, who had a very good performance in general on this one. Joe, the narrative has been that Milan weren't up to much in this game. Was that the case, or was it that Chelsea and Graham Potter's Chelsea were purring in this one? How did you see it?
I don't think I saw it as Chelsea purring necessarily. I thought they were good. Also, I just never would think of any soccer team as purring, yeah. So maybe that's on me. I thought Chelsea were good in this game, and I thought Milan were bad in this game, but I didn't think either team was exceptional or horrible, if that makes sense. So on a number of the different Chelsea goals, so this one ends 3-0, it's poor defending from Milan on Chelsea's second goal. So they're far too slow to close down Reece James' cross from the right wing, and then it's poor marking from Tomori on Aubameyang, and he puts the ball in the back of the net, and that's 2-0. And then the third goal for Chelsea doesn't come that much later in the second half, but it comes later. Chelsea's third goal is Milan in build-up. They're trying to build out of their own half to break into the attack against Chelsea's press, and they turn it over pretty poorly. Sterling has this great ball to Reece James. It's a perfect ball in this moment because he receives it, and he's outside the box. He has a moment to sort of think, and he has Reece James overlapping on his right. And what he could have done, and almost certainly what I would have done in this situation, is just immediately play the ball to Reece James. But instead, Raheem Sterling in zone 14 waits just a split second, turns around, waits for James to develop his run, and then plays him forward so Reece James has the momentum immediately to get the ball, get his foot on the ball, take one touch, and he roofs it or comes very, very close to roofing it. It's a beautiful sequence from Chelsea, but another mistake from Milan. And I think the game in some ways was defined by those sorts of moments where Chelsea do something well, absolutely, and I think they've been functioning solidly under Graham Potter so far, and then Milan just sort of invite them in the rest of the way to go ahead and finish the job.
Yeah, that third goal I think is worth like drilling down on for a moment, because much has been made of the fact that Milan were without a number of their starters, definitely injury hit, and so not that surprising that they end up losing to this Chelsea side. But that goal was really interesting to me because it's Milan giving the ball away cheaply for the second time in as many minutes. But this time they're punished for it. But it's also Chelsea, from the time they get the ball back, moving it really, really quickly. It's a lot of quick passing. And the way it ends up getting to Raheem Sterling, I believe, is there ends up being a tackle put in by a Milan defender, and that slide tackle puts the ball into Raheem Sterling's feet. So you could argue, oh, it's just unfortunate for Milan. It's a tackle that goes the wrong way, and now they're able to counter and score. But in this case, because Milan have had to kind of collapse and do a lot of improvised defending, culminating in that tackle, that's where Raheem Sterling gets that ball in that little bit of space, and that's why there's so much space to the right of him for Reece James to attack. And it's a credit to James for making that really aggressive run. As Joe said, it's really well done by Raheem Sterling to hold it up. It looks so simple, but it's not, because, again, in that moment, that instinct, that adrenaline tells you, like, make something happen, pass the ball, shoot right away. And Raheem Sterling does really well to slow down, wait, and then play that ball. Reece James does well enough to just throw in that little hip shimmy, to make the defenders think, like, oh, he's going for the FIFA cross, for the tap-in, and then he just rifles it near post. Every single thing about this I thought was really interesting from start to finish. And overall, a great win for Chelsea and their newly suave manager.
I was just about to talk about that, Tay-Tay. For listeners who aren't aware, Brighton is about 50 miles from London, but it might as well have been 5,000 miles from the journey that Potter has made from the disheveled look at Brighton to... Yeah. Is he like a spy? Is that what he was going for in this?
He always looked like, we'll continue the Arrested Development references, but when Michael goes to eat dinner with Sally Sitwell and is trying to impress her and then doesn't realize he has to wear a blazer, so he has to wear the like oversized blazer with his unbuttoned polo. It's not a great look, and that's what Graham Potter always had. He looked like he had thrown someone's jacket on last minute. But now at Chelsea, he's got the stylish turtleneck, the black turtleneck to go with the black jacket. Apparently, you move to London, you get fashionable.
Yeah. Someone took him down the King's Road and introduced him to some establishments on that street.
Yeah. So I did the reverse of that. I used to dress stylishly when I lived and grew up in London, and now I just wear baggy t-shirts and basketball shorts every day. So I've gone the other way.
Is the King's Road, is that like Rodeo Drive or something?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. There's lots of tailors and fashion things going on there.
Joe, I know you knew that, but I just
figured
I would ask.
I just wanted to give somebody else a chance to say
that. Yeah, I appreciate
that.
Yeah, it's basically where Stamford Bridge is as well. So it's conveniently located for Mr. Potter to get his threads. Graham, talking of Mr. Potter, Potterball, what have we learned much about it? I mean, obviously made his debut in this competition with that draw against Salzburg, and now has got some points on the board after Tommy Tuchel failed to do so in the opening game. What do we make of the shape here, Sterling and Mount floating around doing number 10 things. We've got James and Chili, as I like to call him, providing width.
Wow. Yeah, so in terms of the team selection, there were some interesting picks by Potter for this match. So Kepa, he keeps his place in goal despite Edward Mendy reportedly being back from injury. The back three returns after the weekend's experimentation with a 4-2-2-2. And Wesley Fofana, he played on the right side of that three. He played well in this game until he suffers what looks like a pretty serious knee injury. So that is definitely one negative from this match for Chelsea. But perhaps most notably, Ruben Loftus-Cheek played in central midfield alongside Kovacic. And I think most Chelsea fans would agree that there is a serious player in there somewhere, but the last few Chelsea managers have all had a different opinion on what sort of player Loftus-Cheek is. So Conte thought that he was an attacker, Sarri thought he was a winger, and then Tuchel often used him as a wing-back. But Potter seems to see him as a central midfielder, which if you ask Loftus-Cheek what his preferred position is, he's always said a central midfielder. And I thought his physicality was just so important to Chelsea getting a grip of the game in the middle of the pitch. He got better as the match went on, and AC Milan, obviously, they have that double pivot of Bennacer and Sandro Tonali, who are both excellent. So having that physicality, having that presence in midfield was crucial for Chelsea. And back when Potter was appointed, we spoke about the midfield area perhaps being an area of concern. So if you look at how Brighton played under Potter, he generally used a two in there. Sometimes it was a three, but basically Potter demands so much of those players in the middle of the pitch. And I wasn't convinced that Chelsea had those players, which is why you got instant speculation about Moises Caicedo joining Chelsea in January. But this is where I think Loftus-Cheek and Kovacic offer a lot. Loftus-Cheek kind of has that quality that a lot of modern central midfielders have, where he kind of he carries the ball a bit like a winger, and I guess that's not too surprising given that he's played there so often, but it's something that Bellingham and Tchouaméni have, and I think Potter is making good use of this. So if you look at the other options, I'm not convinced Jorginho gives Potter the physicality he needs. Kante is still to come back from injury, so you can't really count on him. So in the meantime, I feel like that Loftus-Cheek, Kovacic double pivot with Mount dropping in to help with the numbers, that seems to work best. So it wouldn't surprise me to see that being replicated going forward. It kind of feels like Potter is figuring out areas of his team at a time, and in this match there definitely was some progress.
And Graham, shall we heap praise on Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who was brought into the club and bait and switched with his manager, it seemed, because he thought he was working with one and got another one?
Yeah, I think Aubameyang has just given Chelsea a bit of a focal point in attack. Obviously, he scores, was it his first goal against Crystal Palace at the weekend?
I think it was.
And then obviously he plays pretty well here. I think there's still some questions about how that Chelsea attack works, and the fact that they're going for Christopher Nkunku, that kind of says to me that Potter isn't really convinced either. Christian Pulisic, I don't think, plays a minute of this game, right? He doesn't come off the bench for Chelsea.
That's what we like to hear, folks. That is what we like to hear.
Maybe what you like to hear. I'm not so convinced that is great for Christian Pulisic ahead of the World Cup. But it feels like that is still very much a work in progress. But in as far as short-term solutions go, I think Aubameyang is a pretty decent one.
Yeah, and I think he showed at least what he can bring in this game, because he totally throws off Tomori for that second goal. He has that little feint towards the near post. Tomori bites on that one and then is completely caught in no man's land. Can't even really put in a good attempt at like a volleyed clearance and Aubameyang able to score. But I think that was also the soccer gods punishing Tomori, because like a couple minutes before that, maybe 5 minutes before or so, he gets into a challenge. He was already on a yellow, definitely should have gotten a second yellow. And it is just Oscar level, or maybe at least Golden Globe level acting from Tomori of like, oh, I hurt myself too. Oh, I totally didn't mean to. Oh, you couldn't card an injured person, could you? And he has the face and he looks like he's in such pain, and he kind of hobbles away and then immediately gives it like a shake and then is back to full speed. Really good acting by him to avoid that yellow. But as I said, the soccer gods not pleased, and he was punished with that second goal.
Do you think Tomori treated this one as an England team audition of some thoughts, you know, playing in London and then did that?
I mean, if so, it's an audition that he would like to have back. I don't know if he'll be getting that final call back for that audition, put it that way.
If so, congratulations, Harry Maguire. You're starting in Qatar.
Exactly, yeah.
If you think about it, if you really think about it, this was the best thing that's ever happened to the U.S. men's national team. All of this. So, except Sergiño Dest didn't play very well in this game and Christian Pulisic didn't see the field. But otherwise, you know, the whole England center back thing, just top notch.
Yeah, that's quite a takeaway from this game, Joe, I'd say.
Thank you. I really had to spin it, but I think we spun it properly.
Anything more to add on this one, Joe? Milan are in third in Group E now, Chelsea in second. Salzburg, of course, topping the group after beating Dinamo Zagreb. Would you be worried if you were Milan at this stage? I imagine you would be.
I mean, you look over your shoulder and you see Inter get that win, and you see Napoli get a 6-1 win over Ajax, and Napoli on top of the Serie A table. And yeah, you're a little bit concerned after winning the title last year. This Milan team doesn't scare me in the same way that Napoli does. They don't really scare me in the same way that Inter does either, especially with a healthy Romelu Lukaku. I think they kind of played a little bit over the sum of their parts last year, which is a great thing. And that's how you win titles so much of the time. But I'm not incredibly optimistic. It's still early, and they're only 3 points back of the title chase, of the top spot in the title, I should say, in Italy. But yeah, a little bit of a concern for me in this game with them, you know, still in the thick of it for this particular group, but I'm not sure they're trending in a great direction right now.
Does not seem that way. Let's move on to Anfield. Liverpool 2, Glasgow Rangers 0. Graham, I was quite excited about this one. It's the first time these two teams have apparently ever met in a competitive game, which is exciting in itself. But I thought this one might be, to use British parlance, a bit tasty. I for some reason I had it in my head that Liverpool are reasonably aligned with Celtic in many of their ideologies and various other Celtic reasons. Mm-hmm. And this one ended up being pretty run-of-the-mill comfortable win for Liverpool, which kind of belies their form in the Premier League, I would say.
Yeah, so this was a much-needed win for Liverpool after the draw against Brighton at the weekend. They were pretty much in control for all of this match. As soon as Alexander-Arnold scores that free kick early on, I think you know that Liverpool are going to get the 3 points. For Rangers, this match was always going to be tough, but they have been let's face it, they've been disappointing in the Champions League this season. The team that made the run to the Europa League final last season just hasn't turned up. And at this point, I think it's just about enjoying the last three group games and learning from the experience. I thought Ryan Kent for Rangers played relatively well. Obviously, he was facing his former club. Alan McGregor was in top form. Otherwise, this scoreline would have been more emphatic for Liverpool. But Malik Tillman was the most disappointing player for me for Rangers. We know what Tillman is capable of, but in the last few weeks, his lack of work ethic has become a real problem for Rangers. And time and time again, Tavernier was being left on his own to handle Luis Diaz down that wing, which is not ideal. That's not a scenario you want to be in. And unfortunately, we've seen this, as I say, we've seen this before from Tillman over the last few weeks. He was timid in the Old Firm game and then in that heavy defeat to Ajax as well. So I would be surprised if he starts the home game against Liverpool next week. It feels like he needs to come out of that team at the moment. That was disappointing. But the way Rangers are playing right now, I think they'll just be quite thankful to have avoided an embarrassing defeat. And Liverpool, obviously, look, their shape, Joe, maybe you can talk about some of the tactics that they use. The shape seemed to work well for them.
Yeah, I think they needed a change of some sort. So this wasn't, Jurgen Klopp didn't massively overhaul his team's approach to playing soccer, right? They're still trying to possess. They're still trying to press you high up the field. It's the same Jurgen Klopp stuff that we've seen, but he did make a positional tweak, right? In that way, a tactical change for this game. It was instead of the classic 4-3-3 that's become synonymous with Liverpool with aggressive number eights and the fullbacks doing a lot of the creating and the wingers being really sort of inside forwards and maybe Mo Salah rotating wide. In this game, it was more of a 4-2-3-1, but a flexible 4-2-3-1. So in spaces in the field, it would be almost a back three with Trent Alexander-Arnold playing deep as like sort of an advanced right-sided center back, and then Tsimikas was up high on the left side and Salah was doing just a bunch of stuff on the right wing, tracking back, providing width, tucking in. I mean, he was doing everything on that right side. And so you had some variance in possession in terms of how they tried to approach this game. And then, of course, you have Trent Alexander-Arnold just saying, yeah, we don't really need possession. I'm going to hit this free kick and we're going to go 1-0 up. And it was a beautiful free kick from Trent Alexander-Arnold. But then another aspect of this for Liverpool is that I think part of the double pivot benefit in this game of Thiago and Jordan Henderson being together is they were able to fill in for the fullbacks a little bit more. So when Tsimikas would go up, Thiago could sort of rotate back a little bit into that left back spot to provide protection and width for the back line. And sort of similar on the right side with Jordan Henderson, Alexander-Arnold's patterns were a little different on the right than Tsimikas's were on the left. But again, a tweak that shows Jurgen Klopp is actively trying and has seemingly found a way to try to stem the tide for a Liverpool team that has struggled heavily. It now seems like, given how far back they are in the league, that breaking out of the Champions League is going to be their biggest ticket towards real success this season, other than cup competitions in England. Now they're sitting second in the league, 3 points behind Napoli. A win here was huge for them. They needed it. They got it. And I'd be surprised if we don't see more of that 4-2-3-1 fluid kind of shape going forward.
Very interesting. I'm imagining Trent Alexander-Arnold coming off the field and thinking, oh, I had a great game. I hope no other right-backs have a great game the following evening and prevent me from getting on that plane to Qatar. Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah, good win for Liverpool this one, though. Let's talk about another good win. Bayern Munich 5, Victoria Pilsen 0 in one of the early Tuesday kickoffs. Three wins in three for Bayern. They are top of Group C. I think when Choupo-Moting is on the scoreline, that's sort of an indication that you've been beaten pretty well by Bayern as a general rule, right, Joe? I'd say so.
That's really good. I've never thought about that. When it reaches that level, that thing is done.
It's one or the other. It's either they're comfortably winning or it is desperation time and they've got to make something happen. And so they bring him on with 5 minutes to go. It's one or the other, but it's never good. It just is never good for one team or the other.
Yeah, no disrespect intended to the former Stoke striker, lest we forget, but it does seem an indicator of that fact. A good fact also from Opta France, Bayern Munich are unbeaten in 31 group stage matches in the Champions League, setting a new record in the competition. They've also won their last 10 group matches, which is quite good going from then, I would say. How about Club Brugge 2, Atletico Madrid 0? Perhaps the biggest upset, Graham, of the round?
Perhaps. And Club Brugge, they've been the surprise package of this season's Champions League as a whole. They were expected to finish bottom of Group B, but they're currently top with 9 points out of nine. And the most impressive thing about the results has been the performances, because Brugge took this game to Atletico Madrid, who just looked so anemic in attack. And every time Atletico Madrid looked to be moving forward, making progress, as they did after their away win over Sevilla at the weekend, they always seem to take another step back like this one. And again, I keep coming back to this point. It just feels like Simeone with his attack, he's got so many good options, 4, 5, 6 even good options in attack, but he doesn't really know what relationship works. He doesn't really have a combination that works. And that kind of feels like the big question that is defining this season for Atletico Madrid. For Bruges, one player that has caught my eye in the Champions League this season is Ferran Jukla. So he's a player that I watched for Barcelona last season. He was one of the players Xavi experimented with in his first month as Barcelona manager. I don't know if anyone remembers that, but basically he was just calling up anyone from the B team, and Jutla was one of them, and I thought he did pretty well for Barcelona. So I'm pleased to see him resurface at Bruges. He got one goal and one assist in this match. He's got 2 goals and 2 assists in the Champions League as a whole, and he's got 6 goals and 3 assists in the Belgian League, and I like him a lot. He seems like a complete centre-forward. He can score, he can create, he's physical. He's only 23 as well, so I wonder if Barcelona maybe have a buyback clause on him. A few more performances like this, and it doesn't take much for Barcelona to be interested in an attacker, so maybe they will return for him one day.
Yeah. Pull them levers.
Yeah, as long as it costs them lots and lots of money, I think it'll be totally fine with them.
Actually, it's all right, they've got loads of imaginary banknotes, so it's fine.
Yeah, Xavi's waving around with reckless abandon.
I'll say one other little thing from this game for me. I saw the score before I actually watched any of this game. I watched the highlights of this one, and I just sort of immediately assumed, like, man, they got to figure this Griezmann thing out because they need him starting these games if they want to make a difference. Only to see that he did start this game, and they have worked it out, and now I don't know what to make of this one. Yeah. This group is so weird. Porto, Leverkusen, and Atleti all being on 3 points. Like, maybe that's just the parity balancing out, and then the team that everybody wrote off ends up sort of jumping to the top. But also, maybe more likely is that all three of them are just having very down seasons.
Yeah, and Griezmann, he also misses a penalty in this game. So back on the bench for you, Antoine.
Yeah, Benzema'd it against the bar, I'm going to say, after what he
How
did
dare
at the
you?
Weekend. Yeah.
How dare you?
Sorry.
Benzema'ing it is when you come out of nowhere and like have like a reverse flick and then get it back and then hit a ball that nobody saw coming, and then somehow your team scores and you win. More on them later.
And also blackmail somewhere as well?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Here comes the fire truck, Joe.
Can we pause for a moment to say, I would love to do, as risky as it may be, a 101 episode on that, because I found myself watching him and being like, I still don't know the details of that one. I don't know how clear they are, but I don't know if it's one of those things like Rene Higuita, the old Colombia goalkeeper. He also was like suspended for a year and I think had to do jail time for facilitating a kidnapping, but it was basically like he knew the person who'd been kidnapped, and so he paid it, but because he paid it, he was involved. I forget how it works exactly, but I can't remember if Benzema like actually did bad stuff or was just involved in bad stuff. Either way, I would love to look at that one in more depth, but I can feel like everyone is slowly pulling away from their microphone while I talk about this.
Should we book the lawyer for that podcast now?
I think it's just Taylor and the lawyer going back and forth, and the rest of us are sort of sitting that one out.
Should I call blah, blah, blah?
I just picture me talking to a microphone, and then the lawyer leans in, whispers something in my ear, and then I just throw in, allegedly, at the end of a 3-minute monologue. And that covers us, I'm pretty sure.
On a podcast I listen to, a film podcast, Mark Kermode's podcast, whenever they say something legally troubling, they play the noise of birdsong. So I imagine that Soccer 101 would just be half an hour of birdsong. But we shall see. One other thing from this game, Graham, kit watch. Atletico Madrid's away kit, that sort of, I'm going to call it coral, that colour. Me likey. You likey?
Yeah, I like the colour, and you're putting me on the spot here because there is a story to do with that colour. It's something to do with Atletico Madrid or Madrid's folklore as a city. So if you come back to me on that, I'll find out what it is later in the show.
Sure. I'll do that. Ajax 1, Napoli 6. A big rout for Napoli here, of course. A comeback win as well, Joe. And Dusan Tadic getting sent off for Ajax for a couple of yellows in this one. Ajax's biggest European defeat. This was the heaviest defeat in any contest since 1964 and their joint largest home loss. Let us all, Joe, bow down to Napoli.
I mean, yeah, thank goodness I've been a Napoli fan from the start. Man, I've never had any affinity for Ajax whatsoever. I thought they were any good. Mm-hmm. Napoli from day one for me, and I'm just glad that the rest of you sort of hopped on the bandwagon along the way. Napoli were really good in this game. They scored 6 unanswered goals. They controlled a lot of the ball, 57%. They took 26 shots to Ajax's 8. That doesn't happen a lot when you're coming up against an Ajax team that wants to have a lot of the ball, and they want to be the protagonists in games. There's just so much quality in this Napoli team. Cavara was dangerous. He contributes in possession as well as stretching the back line. He's on the left wing in this game. Chucky Lozano providing a vertical threat on the right. I love watching Chucky Lozano when he is fit and ready to go. The number 8s or 10s are calm. They're technical. They're creative. They're just a really good team right now, and they have been for a while. I'm not breaking any news here. They're top of Serie A at the moment, top of their group on 9 points. Ajax were not good in this game, as a 6-1 scoreline indicates. But man, yeah, credit to Napoli for pulling out a scoreline that I did not expect in this game.
And Luciano Spalletti as well, being the gentleman that we know him to be, after this game, talking about how he's been there before when Roma lost 7-1 to Man United, and how like it's never fun, but it's never indicative of the true like state of the team. And he was very, very generous in his assessment of things. I doubt he really felt the inclination to like turn the knife even more on Ajax, but I think he did a nice job of not just being like, yep, we're the best, instead offering commiserations instead of just celebrations.
Graham, could you see a scenario where Napoli are this awesome and they don't win a single thing this season?
Well, yes, because we've seen that in seasons gone by where they've started on fire, like last season when I think they were top at Christmas time.
Yeah.
And then they faded in the second half of the season. It does feel, this might be tempting fate, it does feel slightly different this season. And I think one of the most frightening things about this win and just the way that Napoli have been playing this season is that this is Napoli without Victor Osimhen, arguably their best player. And last season, one of the issues they faced was he got injured for a spell and they kind of fell apart without him. But they've got this incredible depth in the attacking areas now. So Raspadori, he's been excellent these past few games, but then they have Giovanni Simeone to bring off the bench and get in behind and kind of score those opportunistic chances. And then Elias Elmas and Tanguy Ndombele, they also come off the bench in the second half of this game to just re-energize the midfield. So as I say, I've been stung before by Napoli, who have a track record of fading away in the second half of seasons, but they really do look like the real deal at the moment. And I think they've probably been the best team in the Champions League this season. And looking at their domestic form as well, along with Man City, they've probably been the best team as a whole in all of European football.
And they do two things really effectively, in my mind at least, or two things consistently. They score goals immediately after halftime with a decent amount of regularity. They've done that against Liverpool. They did that against Ajax. They've done that a couple times this season in Serie A. And oftentimes that's when they already have the lead or it's like 1-1 or something like that. And I think to start the second half and come out, if you're already up to increase that lead, if it's level, then to find a way to get ahead in those opening 10 minutes or so, I think always sort of it just shows you that they are able to make changes at halftime, but that they don't get complacent, they don't slack off. And I think Napoli teams of the past have maybe faded away, been caught either at the end of the season or also late in games. This Napoli team, looking at like two of their bigger results so far, I would say was a 2-1 win over Lazio. Lazio scoring, I think, inside the first 10 minutes, and then Napoli end up pulling it back. They get the winner in the 61st. Same thing against Milan. They go up in the 55th off a penalty, so they're scoring in the second half. Then Giroud equalizes, and then it's Simeone, the aforementioned, coming in and scoring in the 78th. And they're able to get that win. And it's grinding out results against difficult teams. It's grinding out results against teams like Spezia, where they get a 1-0 win and they're able to sort of get past them, keep those points, whereas we've seen teams like Juve drop points in those same level of competition this season. So I think it's Napoli getting the results where they need to give themselves that cushion. Then it's about continuing that form, continuing that run, both in the Champions League and Serie A. Ryan, I could see what you're talking about. I hope that's not the case, because I think this team thus far deserves some level of silverware, even if deserve has nothing to do with it.
Indeed they do, Tater. Let's take a very quick break. When we come back, we'll go through the rest of the Wednesday games. Back shortly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to our Champions League roundup. Eintracht Frankfurt 0, Spurs 0. Antonio Conte said, it was a good match. We played with great intensity. Lies. Whatever.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. This match was on at the same time as Liverpool Rangers and Ajax Napoli and Inter Barca. And when I saw this on our running order, I had kind of completely forgotten that this was a Champions League match. So, yeah, maybe not. I'm not sure I believe you, Mr. Conte.
Yes, Spurs not playing sexy football at the moment, shall we say, G. So this one probably won't live long in the memory if indeed you did watch it. Marseille 4, Sporting 1, doing Marseille a disservice there. Porto 2, Bayer Leverkusen 0. How about RB Leipzig 3, Celtic 1? And Cuckoo with a lovely, lovely opener. And André Silva with a brace as well in this one. Graham, did you catch this one?
I did. And RB Leipzig were very impressive for periods of this match. Christopher and Cuckoo is just kind of the complete attacking player in that he covers so much ground, he keeps the ball moving, he's good in possession play, runs channels, he can create, he can finish. This was kind of just a demonstration of everything that he brings to a football pitch. For Celtic, obviously disappointing for them, but Celtic's problem in this group has been wasting chances, and this was a similar story again in this match. And obviously it doesn't help when you have your goalkeeper passing straight to the opposition 37 seconds after they had been given a reprieve by a questionable VAR decision against Leipzig. But Joe Hart, maybe he could argue that he was just being sportsmanlike and giving them the goal that they should have had.
It made me flash to when Pep Guardiola takes over at Manchester City and is basically just like, nope, that's not going to work. I need a keeper who can actually pass the ball. In comes Claudio Bravo. That doesn't work. In comes Ederson, and away we go. Joe Hart bounces around, ends up at Celtic, and continues to pass the ball to opposition players. In this, I've watched it so many times trying to figure out what he is doing. And there are players in the area where he hits it, but there are significantly more Leipzig players in the area, which is why from the time he passes it, I think it's Szoboszlai settles with one touch, plays it to Silva with one touch, who takes a touch and then finishes. So four touches, they come back the other way about 40 yards. And in that moment afterwards, Joe Hart has the audacity to sort of like hold his hand up like that was me. And it's just like, yeah, Joe, we know. Just walk away, get the ball out of the goal, like hang your head in shame and just like maybe get back into it from there. But that was a very poor moment from him. But Graham, to go back to the Nkunku point, equally, in as much as it was a bad game for Joe Hart, it was an electric game for Christopher Nkunku, who gets the goal, but also should have gotten another goal, I think is marginally offside. But the goal that was chalked off was incredible. His finish, that little just chipped ball, and then it insultingly rolls in as he trots away to celebrate. But it's a great run off the last defender. It's great movement. He just kind of kept showing why Chelsea had been in for him and why I think he will be a very good player for them.
You say that, but I can't wait to find out how they ruin him, given their track record of central strikers.
Time will tell. Leipzig, Joe, you could say they were purring in this one. Maybe you wouldn't say that.
you could say that.
In theory, you could say that. Celtic, I think they've got 1 point. Does that make it 1 point for all the Glasgow teams so far, Graham?
It does. I mean, that is a reflection of Rangers' performances. I would say it's slightly harsh on Celtic. They've got two home games next up against Leipzig and Shakhtar Donetsk. So I think they really need 6 points from those two games to stand a chance of making the last 16. I don't think that is beyond them. While Leipzig did deserve this game, I don't think Celtic were completely out of their depth like Rangers have been in some of their games. But yeah, they need to win the next two games, I think.
They do. Famous atmosphere at Parkhead, which many European visitors rave about. Salzburg 1, Dynamo Zagreb 0, we mentioned that earlier.
So fake. That sounds so fake to me when you say that.
It's quite true, isn't it, Graham? Lots of teams.
Oh no, I know it's true. Just you trying to hype up Scottish atmosphere, Ryan, is sort of, I'm trying to think, it's like me being really excited for Manchester City is what it sounds like.
They're allowed one good thing, Taylor.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Italy's allowed pizza. Salzburg 1, Dynamo Zagreb 0. Salzburg, as I mentioned, top of Group E. Real Madrid 2, Shakhtar Donetsk 1. Rodrigo and Vini Jr. getting Real Madrid's goals. Tay-Tay. Three wins from three for Madrid. They top Group F.
They're just so good. They're just so very good. I don't understand how they didn't win this game by like 7 goals. They had so many chances. And At the same time, those chances were all like well created. It wasn't just that they were like head and shoulders above. It was just that they played electric football from start to finish. It really could have been a ridiculously lopsided score, some good goalkeeping, probably some shots that should have been on frame went just wide. But I think you could see just the interplay, how well connected Vinicius Jr. and Benzema are, Rodrigo as well. And I think a player who we've talked about at various points this season but deserves a shout is Fede Valverde, who I believe plays the entire game, and you wouldn't know it because the motor he has in the first minute is the motor he has at the end of the game. He is all over the place. He's making plays. He's making interceptions. He's pressing really well. He's getting shots. He was so good to this team and is so good to helping that attacking play, especially in transition to attack on the counter. And then having good defenders and solid, reliable defenders at that. Ferland Mendy has a play when it's, I think, still 1-1. He closes maybe 20 yards, and it's 1v1. It's not his man, but he's able to just put one foot in, and he knocks the ball into the player's foot, and then that kind of stops that play cold. But it easily could have been 2-1 right there in a very different story, a very different narrative. So I think having players who can step up and underrated players or lesser heralded players stepping up to make those plays at the same time has to have Madrid fans feeling pretty confident.
36 yeah. shots. 36 shots for Real Madrid. That's so many shots in one game. That is so many. And by my count, I'm looking at the shot map right now. It looks like 25 or 26 shots inside the box.
Yeah.
That's also so many shots. Yeah, Shakhtar are certainly a bit fortunate to only get out with a 2-1 loss for goal difference purposes. But yeah, Madrid were dominant in this game.
36 shots, there's so many shots. Quote Joe Lowry, on stage with a shoe in his hand is
correct.
What I will say. and Taylor, I think you're right to pick out Fede Valverde as well. I think this season, in certainly recent weeks, he has shown he's basically a keystone of that Real Madrid team. Very impressive indeed.
Has me excited for Uruguay at the World Cup.
Sevilla.
Really,
won.
Though? Really? Are you?
Yeah. I don't know why. Uruguay are always like, I think they're just always an interesting team to watch. Sometimes it's because they're playing a 4-4-2. Sometimes it's because it's Suarez and Cavani. I love Diego Forlan before that. Fede Valverde coming in. Betancourt in there. Yeah, they've got some players, man. Nahitan Nandez still around.
I'm not saying they don't have good players. They have plenty of talent, but yeah, stylistically. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, you don't love the like grit your teeth and win sort of game? Yeah, I guess that's fair.
Listen to the American trash talking the style of another national team,
hey,
not playing
point.
Exciting soccer.
I am pleased for Uruguay that they have a style. Man, that must feel good, doesn't it? Wow.
I'm sorry, Graham. When was the last time Uruguay won the Gold Cup? Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Good point. Graham, we should just enjoy that Joe and Taylor seem to be disagreeing a lot on air lately, and I'm really enjoying that we have some actual conversations of disagreements on this podcast, which is wonderful to hear. I can't wait to see that on the stage.
The parents are fighting.
Usually it's just England, bad. Scotland, bad. I'm just trying to find some other things for us to disagree about.
I love it. I love it. Keep it up, Joseph. Sevilla 1, Borussia Dortmund 4. Jude Bellingham with a goal and assist in this one. Oh. Dortmund a second in Group G. Dortmund looking reasonably good, coming out of some questionable form, coming into the Clásico with Bayern Munich this coming weekend. A strange game, though, certainly for Sevilla. Less than an hour after full time, Julian Lopetegui, the coach, was sacked. Jorge Sampaoli has been confirmed as the new Sevilla boss minutes before
that,
we started.
That should calm it down. That should calm it down right there. That should just de-escalate. That should get everybody on board, everybody playing really well. I also read that they told Lopetegui before the game that he was going to be removed. So that's fun. Here's 90 minutes for you to probably lose, and if you win, it won't matter.
Well, that's why it was such a weird atmosphere, because it kind of felt like the outcome of the match didn't matter at all. Yep. Everyone there knew that this was Lopetegui's last game. He goes into the middle of the pitch after full time and he kind of applauds the fans and points to the badge and like up over his heart and, you know, as to say like thank you and stuff like that. But
and
so
then
it was,
rips
it was
his
really
shirt
weird.
Off and reveals a Wolverhampton jersey. fashion.
Oh, dear. Yeah, that one's not been announced yet, but that one seems like it's coming very shortly, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, indeed. It was Lopetegui who left Spain like a day before the World Cup as well, wasn't it?
I mean, he didn't want to. Yeah, that's been the most interesting thing about like discussions of Lopetegui is how quickly people will say, like, Jamie Carragher, manage Spain, manage Real Madrid. And it's like, did he though? Because that did not go the way I think the Spanish tenure was meant to go. So I know he technically did. I just think not maybe in the capacity that was expected. But still a very good manager, and I think... will be probably good at Wolves. Weirdly, I would have thought like it'll work out fine, except that he's another Jorge Mendes client. And so it's just they keep just hiring whoever Jorge Mendes has available. I'm assuming it's more than that because obviously they had the connection to him, what, like 6 years ago or so? Yeah. But we'll see. We'll see if it's just another Jorge Mendes revolving door.
I think Lopetegui is a really good coach. It fell apart pretty quickly for him this season, but it was only recently as February people were talking about Sevilla as the Liga title challengers, and I think the summer window was really bad for Sevilla, and I think Monchi has to shoulder some of the blame for that. So it's not purely on Lopetegui, and it kind of felt like towards the end Sevilla and Lopetegui just needed something a little bit different. So it feels like Lopetegui is going to get that at Wolves, and I'd like to see him do well there.
Indeed. Benfica 1, Paris Saint-Germain 1. Joe, we mentioned at the top of the show, Leo Messi with a lovely finish in this one. 40th different opponent. We'll re-emphasise that one as well, that he scored against in the Champions League. This Messi fella, he's got a future ahead of him, Joe.
He does. I think if he keeps it up, he could be a really good player someday, Ryan. I used all my PSG material in the intro, so I got nothing else to add.
All right. I will add that this was a pretty entertaining game from the highlights I watched, and Neymar had set himself up for a scissor kick, which hit the bar, which was a very exciting moment of this game as well. A couple more to go through. Man City 5, Copenhagen 0. Erling Haaland with a brace, I think mercifully was taken off for the second half because he could have run up. Would that have been his fourth home hat-trick in a row? Something insane like that, yeah. 19.
What a party pooper, by the way, Pep is. Pep the party pooper. I wanted that. I wanted that hat-trick more than anything else.
Why, Graham, did he start this game, though? Do you think he insisted in starting? Because he didn't have to play him in this game, surely.
Yeah, he could have just taken the night off, but I feel like that's not in his programming, so he had to play.
Indeed. Well, City with maximum points in Group G, Copenhagen, understandably not picking up.
Can I just give you a Haaland stat here, right, which just blew my mind a little bit. He's got as many Champions League goals as Luis Suarez has in 51 fewer games.
Whoa.
Now, you hear these stats all the time, and it's like a striker, you're like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But we're talking about Luis Suarez is one of the best strikers who has ever played in the Champions League and played for an incredible team, and Haaland's got as many goals as him in 51 fewer games. That's just, that can't be allowed.
Yeah. Guys, if it helps, I think I figured out how to bring Erling Haaland back down to earth, because my daughter is currently in like sleep regression. She likes to wake up in the middle of the night like all the time. Erling Haaland, he has children, that's what has to happen. We need to get him having children, then he won't be able to sleep as much, then he won't have all the free time to dedicate to playing the football, and then his game will decline. So I think the Premier League needs to focus on having children. Yeah.
He doesn't procreate.
Well, that's a good point. Uh-oh. Now we got a problem. So I guess we're looking at like an Android situation. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Just a full, or he's just a full-on robot.
This is the start of the end of the world. This is what's happening here.
I think I'm going to switch analogies and say he's a Targaryen and has to keep the bloodline going. He's probably going to marry his sister at some point.
Ew. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm the one who needs the fire truck of lawyers?
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, yeah, that was parody, fire truck of lawyers, by the way.
There it is.
One more game to discuss. Let's move swiftly on from that comment. Juventus 3, Maccabi Haifa 1. Excuse me, Rabiot with a brace here and Vlahovic with
the panic. Sorry, the sheer panic
I'm
in your
still,
voice.
I'm still on the... I think there's... So many people are talking about Erling Haaland. I can guarantee you that no one has said that about Erling Haaland yet. People have said a lot of stuff about Erling Haaland. That has got to be new. Ryan, in that way, good job.
I'm a trailblazer. Yeah, you're welcome.
Wow.
You're welcome.
All right, anyway, Juve.
Yeah, first win and first points for Juve, taking some pressure off of Max Allegri, did this result. Apparently only 29,000 or less than 29,000 fans in Juventus Stadium. Fans staying away right now. Probably, Graham, not just because of Juve sucking a little bit recently, but also because of economic factors in Italy at the moment. But a good win for them.
Yeah, I also read that Juve home tickets, the cheapest ticket is €140 at the moment.
What?
So I can't imagine that is helping much either, but the fans that were at the Allianz Stadium for this game got a good show, and I think Angel Di Maria just makes such a big difference to this Juventus team. He registered assists for all three goals that Juventus scored, and just having someone who can carry the ball quickly and get them up the pitch quickly and play a pass and provide some service to Vlahovic, who all of a sudden looks like a different sort of striker when he's got someone giving him that service. It was almost like watching a different team. I say almost because Juventus still looked pretty open at the back, as demonstrated by the way Maccabi Haifa got in behind to score. And at 2-1, it was a little bit edgy for Juventus, but nonetheless, they looked so much more potent in attack, and basically Angel Di Maria can never get injured again. That is the main takeaway from this game for Juventus.
All right, that is a good takeaway to have, and a wonderful Champions League roundup. Joe, anything more you want to say? Do you want to evoke the lawyers one more time?
I don't think so, but thank you for giving me the chance to do so.
You're very welcome. Anytime, Joseph. Taylor Rockwell, thank you very much for joining us on this here podcast and enlightening us and brightening our day as always.
I do my best. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you very much. Graham Ruthven, a pleasure as always, good sir.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey. And just to finish, I have the backstory of that nice Atleti away kit. The colour is inspired by the fruit of the strawberry tree, which is on the Madrid coat of arms. I know that you were on the edge of your seat waiting for that one. So there you go.
I looked it up and it says the colour is inspired by them wanting to make money by selling another kit.
That too.
Yeah, that's the one. Okay. That's the one.
There we go. All right. And Joseph Lowry, once again, thank you very much, sir. One more chance to invoke the lawyers. It's here for you.
Am I stupid? Would not the color of the fruit of the strawberry tree be like pink and red? I feel like I missed something. Anyway, I got it. Let's be done. I don't understand what's going on.
Do you remember the South Park episode when the Washington, I won't say the name, but that team let their trademark lapse, and so the boys take it and they start like running their own company called that, and their entire pitch is go F yourselves. That sort of feels like what teams should do with their jersey releases, of just walk up and be like, yeah, it's a kit, buy it, you pigs, and then walk away, because that's really all it is. Stop trying to sell me on all of these things. You know we're going to buy it. Yeah. Don't try to make it fancy. We know you don't care about these things. You just want us to buy them, so fine, we will.
Yeah, like Ricky Bobby doing those commercials. Yeah, it's like, exactly. Big red gum. F you.
Yeah. If you don't chew big red.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, us at Total Soccer Show would never seek to try and sell you anything or anything like that. Come to our live show, by the way, November 20th, Alidafield, Brooklyn. Thank you very much, listener, for checking us out on this podcast. We'll be having another one on the feed very shortly. But for now, bye.